State workers sue over a cut to their retirement plan. Good evening, I'm Connor Ballantyne.
And I'm Madeline Beck, and Capitol reporter Dan Boyce has our top story tonight on Montana Evening Edition.
We'll also tell you about a grant to fight drugs in Frenchtown. And in our feature interview, news director Sally Mock talks with furloughed National Park worker Denise Germain about the frustration park workers feel over the ongoing government shutdown. Montana's largest public employee union, the MEA-MFT, is suing the state over a fix to the retirement plans of teachers. The 2013 legislature passed major reforms to the state's two biggest pension systems earlier this year. Capitol reporter Dan Boyce says the lawsuit stems from a decrease to a guaranteed annual raise for retirees.
We promised we would file a lawsuit. We made it very clear quite a while ago.
MEA-MFT President Eric Fever. We'll get back to him in a minute. Fixing the state's two biggest pension systems was one of the biggest priorities of this past legislature. So what we have here are the Teachers Retirement System, or TRS, and the Public Employees Retirement System, or PERS. The Montana Constitution requires the state's retirement plans pay for themselves over the long term. The money the system is bringing in needs to match what has been going out to pay benefits over that time frame. The legislature defines that time frame as 30 years. If it happens, it's called amortizing. But the TRS and the PERS did not do that. The pension stock investments took a huge hit in the Great Recession. The legislature passed laws in the early 2000s giving retirees more money. So rather than paying for themselves in 30 years, the pensions were going to stay in the red forever. In fact, they were on track to be more than $4 billion in debt in 30 years. But the legislature tackled that. Here's Governor Steve Bullock's budget director, Dan Villa.
We're very pleased in the Bullock administration for having proposed legislation that would fix our public pension issues without raising taxes.
The way the fix works is public employees are required to put in more money to their retirement. The employers, like a school district, the state, a city, or whatever, the employer puts more money in, and then millions of dollars in coal tax money is thrown in there too. But the legislature amended it to add in another piece, reducing the yearly cost of living increase given to current retirees. So, remember MEA-MFT President Eric Fever?
We promised we would file a lawsuit. We made it very clear quite a while ago.
They're suing over that last part in the teachers' retirement system. Legal staff at the time of the amendment said reducing this yearly raise was a breach of contract to the retirees.
That wasn't part of the deal we ever made with the legislature.
If that decrease is thrown out by the lawsuit, then the state would have to pay more to retirees. But Fever says the TRS should still meet the state's long-term benchmark for paying for itself.
It marginally increases the amortization period, but still that period remains below 30.
Below 30 years. That would not be the case for the other major pension plan, the Public Employees Retirement System. The Association of Retired Montana Public Employees says they too plan to sue regarding the reduction in annual raises. That suit is expected soon, and if it were to succeed, the PERS would amortize over about a 44-year window, overshooting that 30-year benchmark. But Governor Bullock's budget director Dan Villa says paying for itself in 44 years is better than infinity years.
The funding ratios are turned around. We continue to make progress. We are no longer in the scenario of ever running out of cash.
And Villa believes 44 years still would fulfill the requirements of the Montana Constitution. I'm Dan Boyce reporting at the Capitol.
And in other news from around the state, a 54-year-old Columbia Falls woman is hospitalized in critical condition after being shot twice as she advanced towards members of the Flathead County SWAT team at the end of a standoff. Flathead County officials say Michelle Gentry was shot at 6:30 p.m. yesterday. Sheriff Chuck Curry says officers responded to a report of an armed, suicidal woman at about 2 p.m. Curry says Gentry refused to leave the house and negotiations continued for several hours without success. When Gentry came out of the house, officers say she advanced on SWAT team members while armed. Gentry was taken to a Kalispell hospital where she was listed in critical condition. The officers that fired the shots have been placed on paid administrative leave. Kalispell police are investigating.
A 43-year-old Libby woman has died in a single vehicle rollover on U.S. Highway 2 west of Glasgow. The Montana Highway Patrol reports the woman was eastbound at about 8:30 a.m. yesterday when her vehicle went off the road and rolled several times. Trooper Matthew Finley tells the Billings Gazette the woman was not wearing a seatbelt and was ejected from the vehicle. Her name hasn't been released. The crash is still being investigated.
A Missoula County coroner's jury has determined the August shooting of death of Missoula man was not a criminal act. The Missoulian reports a coroner's jury reached its decision today in the death of a 23-year-old Chad Goodman. Goodman was shot early on August 18th by a 21-year-old acquaintance, Justin Nelson. Nelson testified that the two were at his apartment looking at a gun Nelson had purchased. Nelson said Goodman handed the gun back to him and he pulled back the slide to make sure the chamber was empty when the gun somehow fired. Goodman was hit underneath his right arm. Deputy Missoula County Attorney Jason Marks said the outcome was what he expected, but said the inquest allowed the facts to be revealed in a public setting.
Former dean of the journalism school at the University of Montana, Charlie Hood, died last night after a long struggle with Parkinson's disease. Hood was journalism dean from 1982 to 1993 and was a graduate of the school, where he began teaching in 1967. Retired professor, friend, and colleague Carol Van Valkenburg says Hood was a popular dean.
Faculty was very much behind Charlie and felt he had done really an excellent job as dean. You know, 10 years, he felt 10 years was a good 10 year and that was time to turn over the reins to somebody else. But I think the school really was forward looking while he was there, and he tried very hard to do a lot of interdisciplinary things. And so I think we made a lot of strides while he was the dean.
Van Valkenburg says Hood helped push the journalism school into national prominence.
He wanted to achieve, and he wanted the faculty to achieve, and he really wanted the journalism school to be nationally known. And he was a kind of a calming influence and a gentle guy, but it sort of masked, I think, his desire to have the school excel.
Memorial services for former journalism dean Charlie Hood are pending.
A 24-year-old Bozeman man faces a deliberate homicide for a fatal shooting outside a house party last month. Gallatin County Attorney Marty Lambert filed an affidavit yesterday seeking to charge Cody Christopher Little with shooting a 24-year-old Larry L.J. Clayton of Belgrade in the abdomen early on September 20th. Clayton died at a Seattle hospital the next day. Lambert is also seeking to charge Little with two counts of attempted deliberate homicide after James Armstrong was shot in the leg, and Riley Ray said Little pointed the then-empty shotgun at his face and pulled the trigger. Ray told officers that Little and Armstrong were arguing when Little left and returned with a shotgun, firing a warning shot before shooting Clayton and then Armstrong. Little said he was defending himself.
An over $600,000 grant will be used to help prevent youth substance abuse in the community of Frenchtown in Missoula County. The Office of National Drug Control Policy awarded Missoula County $123,461 per year for 5 years to fund the Frenchtown Community Coalition. The coalition's new coordinator, Gypsy Ray, says her organization is made up of community members interested in reducing substance abuse rates among local young people.
Yes, it is a problem for several reasons. Frenchtown, of course, is a community within Missoula County. However, there are very few services out here. Really, what we have is a school and a fire department and a grocery store and a gas station and some bars. That's about it. And so, therefore, our youth are left to drive to Missoula to find activities to do or to create their own activities, which are often not substance-free.
Ray says too many local teenagers are experimenting with alcohol and marijuana.
Each year, the state students do a survey of the Montana Prevention Needs Assessment Survey, and 8th graders, 10th graders, and 12th graders are surveyed. That's really where we came up with the information that alcohol and marijuana are the primary substances we're worried about in our community. We have actually, since 2010, had 5 graduates of Frenchtown High School who have died in alcohol-related accidents, so that's a concern for us. But we really do feel like we're at the prevention stage where we are able to make a big impact both with community norms and directly creating activities for youth that are substance-free and that we'll be able to make a change.
The Drug-Free Community Support Program grant will fund a variety of drug prevention efforts, starting with staffing at the Frenchtown Community Coalition itself.
So first of all, it supports a full-time coordinator In the past, it's just been a very part-time position, limited resources, and that kind of thing. Now it's a full-time position, which is what I'm funded under. So my job is to literally run the coalition, coordinate with stakeholders, and implement the bigger picture plans for our community over the next 5 years. Then we have a youth coordinator, and his position is actually also one that was part-time and will now go full-time. And he really creates substance-free activities in our community, everything from intramural sports to dodgeball tournaments, outdoor cinemas, all sorts of things that we can bring to our community rather than having our kids go to another town or create their own.
The Frenchtown Community Coalition is one of 147 coalitions around the country to be awarded the Drug-Free Community Support Program grant. For more information, visit frenchtowncommunity.com.
The Helena Justice Court is rejecting the overloaded state public defender office's request to be taken off new cases. The Office of the Public Defender told the court in September that staff attorneys have too many cases and are in danger of not meeting their ethical obligation to properly represent clients. The Public Defender's Office says that more than 3,000 cases were assigned in 2012 to its 10 attorneys in a region that covers Lewis and Clark, Jefferson, and Broadwater counties. Justice of the Peace Michael Swingley rejected the request today. Swingley says the office is required to represent indigent defenders and must contract private attorneys if staff attorneys are overloaded. The Public Defender's Office has said its budget is already strained.
Utah is set to become the first state to reopen national parks within its borders, as other states also consider whether to send money to the federal government to save lucrative tourist seasons. In southwest Utah, Zion National Park Superintendent Jock Whitworth said today that staff members began opening gates and removing barriers and expected to have the park fully operational tomorrow. The Obama administration yesterday announced it would allow states to foot the bill for reopening parks. Utah is the first taker, with Governor Gary Herbert wiring $1.67 million to federal officials to reopen five national parks and other national park units by tomorrow. At least four states had asked for the authority to reopen their parks because of the financial hit caused by the closures. Montana Governor Steve Bullock says the state will not pick up the tab to reopen Glacier National Park. Later on in our broadcast, we'll have a feature interview with a furloughed Glacier Park worker.
The commission that oversees complaints against attorneys is recommending the Montana Supreme Court publicly censure a Billings attorney and put him on probation for a year over threats reported by another attorney. The Billings Gazette reports the Commission on Practice found that Jeffrey Michael violated a provision of the Montana Rules of Professional Conduct for making abusive, disruptive, and threatening statements to another Billings attorney, Elizabeth Honecker. The complaint stems from Honecker's handling of a petition for post-conviction relief filed on behalf of a man who argues Michael coerced him into pleading no contest to a 2007 arson case. Honecker's complaint said Michael told her in October 2011 that she, quote, better watch her back, end quote, and that he also left a voicemail on January 2012 in which he threatened to, quote, wipe her out.
In a story yesterday about Montana approving rules for motorists to salvage roadkill for consumption, the Associated Press, relying on the comments of a Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks official, reported erroneously that a smartphone application will be developed for drivers to apply for roadkill salvage permits using their smartphones. The online permits will only be available through the state agency's website, and a separate smartphone app is not planned.
A Nampa carjacking suspect who eluded authorities for over a week before being arrested in Montana briefly escaped from custody as he was being returned to Idaho to face charges. The Ada County Sheriff's Office says 36-year-old Rodney Cyber ran away when a private security company's transport vehicle stopped to let him use the restroom on Interstate 84 southwest of Boise shortly before 6:30 p.m. yesterday. Officials say Cyber was shackled and handcuffed when he ran away. Officers shut down the freeway and set up a perimeter. At about 7 p.m., Cyber surrendered to officers. Cyber was booked into Ada County Jail on a felony escape charge. He was expected to appear in county court today.
If reporters have a question about Glacier National Park, they usually first call the park's public affairs officer, Denise Germain. But since October 1st, the park offices have been closed, and Germain is among the 250 park employees furloughed by the government shutdown. News Director Sally Mock reached Germain on her cell phone today, not just to talk about the park's shutdown, but also how it has affected Germain and the other workers who have been forced to lose, so far, almost 2 weeks' pay. Germain says a handful of essential park employees are still on the job.
We've got about maybe 20 to 25, just depending, that are still working at the park to basically maintain the closure of the park and to do some of the projects, winterization projects, such as utilities, water systems, that need some attention as the weather starts to get colder.
What would you normally be doing in October in the park, Denise?
Well, my position is the public affairs, the communications and outreach manager, as well as the lands manager working with the private lands within the park. So my normal day-to-day job is communication, outreach to the public, to the media, as well as internal communication with our employees as far as what's going on, issues at hand, closures, changes, openings, whatever it may be, but basically communications.
Well, you are doing that with me right now, but you're not getting paid for this, are you?
You know, I'm not, and I have been doing this very limited part-time throughout the shutdown, and mostly it's responding to inquiries. But probably the more important part of my job has been to keep communications open with our employees, trying to keep them apprised of what's going on and keep them up to date on what's going on as far as, you know, filing for unemployment insurance if they want to do that, how they can use their savings to take loans from it, keeping them updated about what we know about the shutdown, and just keeping that internal communications going.
It's been almost 2 weeks since you were furloughed, and that starts to really eat into people's paychecks. I mean, I assume some are applying for unemployment. Are you?
Well, coming up on 2 weeks is a paycheck for us. We get paid every 2 weeks. And lots of employees, this definitely has an impact to us. I mean, we're the same as everybody else. We've got kids in school. We've got mortgages to pay, you know, need to go to the grocery store to get food to put on the table for our families, loans to pay off. I mean, we're just like everyone else. What's a bit unsettling with this is it's the unknown. We have no idea if this furlough was going to last 2 days, 2 weeks, or 2 months, and we still don't know that.
So what, Denise, is morale like? I mean, how upset are people at their employer being the Congress and the president?
You know, I think it's overall disappointment. And I see that not only with our employees, but also with the visitors, with our neighbors, with our community members that provide services for our guests. I think it's just plain disappointment that moves to anger. And we see that not only, you know, within the employee ranks and, you know, the folks that I just talked about, but our visitors as well. We still have several visitors, you know, coming to the park with the idea that they're going to get to see Glacier National Park. And it may be their bucket list or their vacation that they've saved for years. And they get here and we say, gosh, sorry, we can't let you into the park. And for us, it's counterintuitive because many of us working for the Park Service, we're here because we care about the resources, we care about visitor, we care about customer service, and to say, hey, the park's closed right now is very opposite of why many of us are here and why we're working with the National Park Service.
Plus, you're getting all their ire. You're the face of the shutdown. When they show up at the park, you guys are the ones who are there having to take the brunt of that anger, are you not?
You know, we get a little bit of it, but for the most part, the visitors have been very respectful of the folks in the green and gray. They've been very respectful of the rangers, and the rangers are the one telling them, hey, sorry, it's closed. So for the most part, folks have been very respectful, and boy, that's definitely appreciated.
This is normally a busy time for park employees, isn't it? I mean, obviously summer with all the tourists and so on is really, really busy, but this is your transition season where you kind of get the park ready for winter, and winter is a big deal in the park. So you would be normally very busy now, all of you, wouldn't you?
It is. It is a, you know, almost any time of the year is busy for whatever reason it is at Glacier National Park. And in the summer, we've got about 350 employees that are hired as seasonal help. And at this time of year, we've got about 125 of those folks still on hand. And one of our biggest projects is not only just the fall visitation, and lots of locals come to the park this time of year. The fall colors are spectacular.
This year, the road happened to be open longer on the west side, which is the first for several years, and that's been quite exciting for not only everybody in the park, but the communities around the park. And so that's a big impact for us right now. Probably the biggest impact that I see is the getting ready for winter, as you say, the winterization of our facilities, the winterization of our roads, and preparing for that.
Denise, one final question for you. If you could sit down with the congressional leadership and the president, what would you say to them?
Oh, that's a hard one, Sally. You know, I think there's always a difference between being an employee of a government agency and then being a constituent, a member of the United States of America and as a taxpayer. And I think the overall message is, you know, let's get our act together. Let's work together.
Speaking as both.
As both.
Well, I have been speaking with Denise German, who is the public information person for Glacier National Park. She's been furloughed almost 2 weeks and was generous enough with her time to speak with me today. Denise, I really appreciate it, and good luck.
Thanks, Sally.
And in this weekend's forecast, west of the Continental Divide tonight, expect partly cloudy skies and lows in the mid-20s and lower 30s. Tomorrow should have mostly cloudy skies with a chance of rain and highs in the upper 40s to mid-50s. Sunday, expect mostly cloudy skies with a chance of rain and patchy fog in the morning. Highs should reach the mid-40s to lower 50s. For central Montana tonight, expect partly cloudy skies and lows 25 to 35 degrees. Tomorrow calls for increasing clouds and patchy freezing fog in the morning. There is a slight chance of snow in the afternoon and highs 45 to 55 degrees. Sunday should be mostly cloudy with a chance of rain and snow and highs 40 to 55 degrees. Southwest Montana tonight, expect partly cloudy skies and lows 25 to 30 degrees. Tomorrow calls for mostly cloudy skies, light chance of rain in the afternoon, and highs 45 to 50 degrees. Sunday, expect mostly cloudy skies and a chance of rain and snow with highs of 35 to 45 degrees.
Currently in our listening area, Helena is 55 degrees with partly cloudy conditions. In Kalispell, it's mostly cloudy and 51 degrees. Butte has 48 degrees under sunny skies. Great Falls is cloudy with 51 degrees. Here in Missoula, the temperature under mostly cloudy skies is 51 degrees. It's 50 degrees and sunny in Dillon. In Hamilton, it's partly cloudy and 53 degrees. Libby has 49 degrees with partly cloudy conditions. And in Polson, skies are mostly cloudy and it's 52 degrees. And now for the editorial comments of Juliana Rose.
According to an article in Uncover Missoula, a publication of the Missoulian newspaper, the city's history began in 1860 with a settlement known as Hellgate. The standard article included in the past two editions failed to recognize important events relating to American Indians and their deep historical connection to Missoula. According to the Confederated Salish and Kootenai Tribes website, Salish-speaking tribes and a Kootenai-speaking band occupied a huge territory covering western Montana, parts of Idaho, British Columbia, and Wyoming. It was in Missoula where they dug bitterroot and fished for bull trout in the icy cold water of the Clark Fork River. Indeed, the Salish place name for the Missoula area literally translates to place of the small bull trout. The picture painted in the Uncover Missoula article portrays early pioneers in Hellgate, Fort Owen, and St. Ignatius as the few humans strong enough to live in a harsh and unknown land. American Indians had been living in these places long before outsiders came to live in this region. After the area began to see more white settlement, specifically from missionaries and homesteaders, local tribes faced increasing pressure to change their means of subsistence, their religion, and to give up their traditional homelands. Agricultural and industrial development in the 1880s put heavier demands on resources like water and land that had once been plentiful. When Chief Charlo's band of the Bitterroot Salish were forced to march to the Flathead Reservation in 1891, the region's tribes began to see a whole new level of cultural erosion. Indian children were taken by force from their families and placed in boarding schools, for example, the Ursuline Academy in St. Ignatius, where they were forbidden to speak their native languages or participate in their traditional tribal spiritual practices. History is, for the most part, written by the conquerors, and the history of American Indians is often whittled down to the simplified version of settler versus Indian as taught in elementary schools. The chopping of Native history from basic education demotes an entire people's history to second-class status. When we treat a people's history as second-class, or even worse, deny it altogether, we continue to marginalize tribal people and systematically treat them in unequal and possibly discriminating ways. If news media desires to educate their readership on Missoula's history accurately, American Indians must be acknowledged and their history valued. We hope future issues of Uncover Missoula will portray an inclusive history of not only the white settling of Missoula, but also of local tribes and their history in the Missoula area. This is Juliana Rose, the racial justice intern with the YWCA. This commentary is a product of the Racial Justice Initiative of the YWCA Missoula. Our goal is to promote racial justice in Montana through timely, informed, news-based education. For more information about the Racial Justice Initiative, visit ywcaofmissoula.org. Thanks for listening.
Juliana Rose is one of several commentators on Montana Evening Edition. The views expressed do not necessarily represent those of this station. If you have a comment, you can send it via our webpage to mtpr.org or on Montana Public Radio's Facebook page. Montana Evening Edition is also archived on our website. I'm Madeline Beck.
And I'm Connor Ballantyne. Thanks for listening and have a great weekend.